Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and the TPU gaiter allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 15% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. Recently, I had a friend reach out to me about a veterinarian in the UK that was running a track system rehab facility and really focused on trying to figure out how to get horses sound and comfortable in a species-appropriate environment and also listening to them. So I reached out to Dr. Lily Wilson of Nurturing Nature Equine, who also has the Vital Horse podcast, to see what she does with her attuned assessment and how she listens to these horses and understands how to rehab them by becoming more astute in her observations. We talk about everything from species-appropriate lifestyle and postural rehabilitation and understanding the little subtle changes that a horse might do to tell you what might be going on with them. All right. So why don't we start, and you can tell us a little bit about your journey into the equine world and what led you to attuned assessment.
Yeah. So I've had horses. Well, I started riding when I was six on a riding holiday in Wales. I sat on a huge Shire horse and I thought it was the most amazing feeling in the world. And then I sort of helped out at riding schools and things like that because my parents lived in the town and we couldn't afford to have horses of our own. And then I kind of would scrape some money together to go and have riding lessons. And then I managed to have a pony on loan in my teenage years. And one of the ones that I had was a very traumatized rescue case. And I was really, really interested in training, and I wanted to be a horse whisperer basically. And then I also wanted to be a vet since I was probably about six as well. And I got into vet school and really enjoyed the science side of things, thought that I might want to go into research actually at one stage, but then realized that I didn't really want to be away from actually interacting with animals and loved having patients and their owners to work with. But after a few years in general practice, I sort of felt a bit dissatisfied with the way that I was interacting with my patients. And it had kind of spilled over into how I was interacting with my own horses. I kept my own horses throughout vet school and after graduation as well. And I realized, well, actually, the thing that really made me realize was I bought a youngster, and his name is Sonny, and he features quite heavily in lots of the photos and things of with me, and you'll hear me talking about him on my own podcast, the Vital Horse podcast. He is the reason, really, for me doing what I'm doing now. So I got him as a yearling, and pretty soon realized that I was kind of struggling to harmoniously do almost anything. So I had two horses at the time already who I guess I was just comfortable. We were comfortable with each other and communicated reasonably well. But I realized that I had really switched off actually from paying attention to animals in general, because what had happened was I was a really busy general practitioner vet. And I had a huge list of patients to get through every single day. And so I'd become very businesslike in my manner towards them. And Sonny, thankfully, showed me that this did not work for him. And I had to kind of rethink a lot of things. And it actually led me on quite a personal change journey as well. And actually has led me to giving up general practice. And I now run a very small scale. It's a rehab boarding. It's on a track system. And I do things quite differently to how I did them when I was a general practitioner. And I feel like I've really gone back to feeling more like myself when kind of first had horses as my friends, as opposed to a constant list in a diary. Now that is it's kind of a necessity for general practitioners, you know, because you have a lot of patients registered to you. But I think that it's worth, so this is probably what we'll talk quite a lot about today. It's kind of worth looking at your interactions, because not only for your kind of personal satisfaction, I suppose, but also actually the effectiveness of your interactions with them. And what I found with attuned assessment, I can explain what it is that the animal becomes a much more active participant in all of your interactions, in your investigation and your treatments. And then, well, certain behavioral so-called problems can melt away, or they can actually alert you to things that you didn't know were there in the first place. And their general health and well-being improves. And I think that my general health and well-being has also improved. And they've taught me a lot about things like your lifestyle, how important your lifestyle is to how you feel in general. And so I've done a big transformation in the way that I live my life day to day since then. So shall I explain what attuned assessment is?
Yeah. And actually, I just want to interject and say how much I absolutely love that you have a track system rehab property, because that's what I do here. I have a track system rehab facility focusing on horses that have a hoof-based lameness. And I know that, especially overseas, I think that it's much more common than in the States to have track systems. But here, it's such a rare thing. So to hear a veterinarian that has one is just amazing. I love that so much. So I'm so excited that you are able to share a little bit about your experience and kind of, I know that that's not the focus of today, but even just that you have that experience as well is really great. But yeah, for those that might not be familiar, it would be great if you could explain what attuned assessment is and how it differs from other ways of assessing lameness or hooves.
Yeah. So I've called it attuned assessment because the big part of it is developing two-way communication. So the attunement to the horse and getting as subtle as you can is really a big part of it. From a kind of a practical standpoint, it's quite difficult for a professional who... So if you call out a professional about a problem with your horse and the complaint, so-called complaint that you're calling them out about is very vague, then it's difficult for them to get started on an investigative process. So just from a very practical standpoint, as an owner, being able to be a bit more specific about what it is that you've noticed can really help, one, for you to choose actually the appropriate professional for the problem that you're seeing, and two, to be able to give them as much information as possible. So that's one part of it, is actually gathering enough observations that are sort of specific enough for us to be able to actually work with that information. And then the attunement part is where you respond to signs that a horse is showing in some way, and they actually end up showing you more. So actually not just horses, but I've noticed it in all of my patients. So this was quite early on when I first got Sunny, and I was learning, I was kind of relearning, I suppose, going back to a lot of, I guess I would call them horsemanship, like sensitive horsemanship principles, where that it involves a lot of deep observation of the horse. So what are they doing everywhere in their whole body? How are they physically, mentally, and emotionally moment to moment and in different situations, and how are they responding to what you're doing, and also being really cognizant of what it is that you are also doing. And what that leads to is that they tend to know that they're aware that you are more aware of them. And then when they show you something, one, you do notice a bit more, but they also often show you quite a lot more clearly. So it leads to, in very stoic horses, it can, and sort of shut down horses, it can lead to them opening up more. And then in horses that are really anxious, and if that's the case, if you're, say, investigating them for pain, if you palpate them, so if you feel their body with your hands, they may respond anywhere and everywhere. And so you can't really pinpoint where it is that they're uncomfortable, other than if you can actually feel, a tissue change. Whereas if you can respond to the more subtle signs, in that case, they tend to become more specific in their response because they notice what you've noticed. And they feel safer. And it seems like they feel like they can show you more. And then if they're quite a lot more stoic and wouldn't tend to respond, they tend to open up more. So I often have it where horses will actually start to pick up a limb or turn around and look at an area with their head once they notice that you are actually picking up on the more subtle signs. And they can be really quite subtle, like a slight breath hold or a change in their blinking, a change in their head height. And I tend to sort of respond in kind. So if it's a subtle response, then my response to that is subtle. So I might be feeling a particular body area and notice a subtle response. And so just pause in that area and then try again. Sometimes it's nothing. It's just what they're doing anyway. But if you're homing in on somewhere, then they will tend to start to give you more information at that point. I was just going to end by saying that with the track, I've really found that I can observe a lot more with distance observations and with the choice to conduct their day. You know, they have free choice of various feeding areas or napping areas, how much to move and all of that kind of thing. Then you also notice more about their choices and their behaviors than if they live a more restricted or confined lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting when you were talking about the assessment that you're doing and how the horses are responding. I think that a lot of times many of us kind of see similar things and don't even realize it, like in terms of how the horses are responding and what they're willing to show us. Because even when I mean, I still work on horses' hooves off property. So I see, you know, 140 horses off property a month. And there are some who I come to for the very first time, and they might be, you know, very, like an example would be like one horse that no farrier could trim its hind feet. And he would just try to kick out every time you picked up a hind foot instead of kind of, you know, people would think it was like a behavioral issue or something where he was, you know, just not happy about having to stand for the farrier. But my first assumption is that everything that I come to, even if it's not true, my first assumption is that it's always pain, so that I can kind of see where that might be coming from. And I do find, like you're saying, is that, you know, if I'm more willing to take a step back and sort of look at how they're shifting their weight or how they're standing or how they're holding their body before I even pick up a foot, that the horses aren't feeling like they have to react as strongly to say no to something. If I'm, you know, they don't want to pick up a leg instead of kicking out, like maybe it'll be a more subtle response because I'm not going and forcing something. I'm trying to see why they're objecting. And I know that that's not the same as a vet assessment, but just as a hoof care provider, that's something that as you were talking, I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like this is something that we see as hoof care providers too. If you're willing to look for the things that these horses are doing, they're willing to show you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's safer. It's a lot safer. And it's also important for establishing the clinical relevance of what you find. So that's a big subject and has a lot of aspects to it. But for example, it always strikes me. So I do some online consults and sometimes people send me x-rays, but it's very difficult to interpret something like a diagnostic image without looking at the actual horse and I think without interacting with them, because you don't have the information as to what is important to that individual horse in order to tie in, because you can find all sorts of things when you do an investigation, but then you have to determine which things are actually relevant to that individual horse. So it's helpful for that too.
Yeah, and like you're saying, that's the same reason I don't give advice on trims remotely, because, you know, I am also looking at how horses respond to each thing I do with the feet and seeing how they're shifting their weight or how they're standing on a foot after I put it down. And yeah, so that's really interesting. I like that you're saying that with the radiographs, you know, you're hesitant to sort of do a consult without seeing more of the horse. So that's really cool. Sorry, those are like a little bit of a tangent, but that's really cool to be able to connect that to sort of what we do too.
Yeah, and I think you bring up another important point with the foot handling. So as a sort of a behavior, if your horse struggles with having their feet trimmed or picked out, you know, any kind of foot handling struggle, it's actually often something physical. It's also obviously for a prey animal can feel threatening. So it may be an emotional, you know, a fear-based response. But often there is something to do with comfort or weakness or stiffness or balance or incoordination. So it can give you a lot of information on in that regard as well. I kind of divide up the attuned assessment into categories. So I've got distance observations. So that's where them living as free a lifestyle as possible that allows them to express as many behaviors as possible is really helpful, because then you can see the absence of certain usual behaviors, or you can see changes in their behaviors and their choices. Interaction observations is another kind of category that I teach about. And that's where either when we're maybe doing a training session with them on the ground or in the saddle, or if we're doing things like foot handling or veterinary or husbandry procedures, certain signs in those settings can alert us to problems. So I also run an online course on needle shyness. And I found I was also led down that road by a couple of really needle shy patients that I had, and also my own horses. And I have found in many, many cases that they have significant body discomfort. And then the sensation of a needle is genuinely really painful, because they already have a heightened kind of pain response, or that they're painful in their neck perhaps. So yeah, getting back more towards the hooves, foot handling is a real indication often of either, yeah, comfort or stiffness or weakness or balance problems. It may well not be purely a behavioral. I think that term is maybe, I was going to just say bankrupt, but that's not quite the right term. It's, you know, behaviors don't occur in a vacuum. And so it's really important that we ask, why is this behavior arising? I think if your professional that you're asking to investigate a behavior says it's just behavioral, I'm kind of not convinced by that response. You know, we need to dig a little deeper than that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you had mentioned a bit ago about some of the subtle things that you're looking for when you're doing these assessments. And I was wondering if you could point out some that owners and or really anyone working with horses might be able to pick up on. I know that you had mentioned breathing, but I was wondering if there's anything else that you're kind of paying attention to that we might be able to see.
Yeah, so I tend to divide it up into posture, so whole body posture, and then facial expressions, and then behavioral responses. And then you can have some other, I guess, like reflexes or bodily functions. So if I say something, I'll give an example from each of those. So body posture, you can get indications from how horses habitually stand as to what is going on with the nervous system control of their posture, and also whether they are trying to offload areas that are uncomfortable or painful or dysfunctional. So an example of that, a very, very common abnormal posture amongst domesticated horses, is to have camped under limbs, mm-hmm. front or hind or both, all four. And there's often a whole range of underlying causes or perpetuating causes to that. But that is it's definitely an indication that something needs to be addressed. So when a horse habitually stands with their cannon bones non-vertical and they're slanted towards the belly, like towards the midline, it will sometimes go hand in hand with just changes in hoof alignment, but sometimes there's also problems with dentistry and the pole or the neck or the back or the pelvis. So that's something that's less attuned, I suppose, because it's not so much a response from the horse, but that's a very important initial distance observation that I would make as to their whole body functioning. But then you could also have, when you first approach a horse to do an assessment, you might have a change in overall body posture. So they might go from a kind of rounded and upright limbs posture to a bunched, you know, ready to spring and move away kind of posture, or very, very still is the other thing if they're a bit concerned. And that can look like calmness, but it's really not. And then head and neck positioning is really important. So if when you approach a horse, they might lower their head slightly, they might raise it slightly, they might turn it slightly. All of those can be kind of an appeasing kind of signal, sometimes a self-soothing signal. And it's hard to say, because there's a whole string often of behaviors that happen in a row for you to really be able to interpret it. But what I've found is that it doesn't necessarily matter, because you could argue back and forth all day about exactly what certain signs mean. And really, it's a question of trying out responses and then seeing what they then do, as to then later on, maybe you'd get a more complete picture of what it actually means. It's harder to interpret individual signs in isolation. So I'm not sure how helpful it is to say, you know, oh, he turned his head away at this moment, that means this. I think it's more building up a pattern over time, and you might repeatedly see that a horse turns his head away and pauses for a long time before lifting a left forelimb, for example. And then you might also notice that they tend to maybe stand in a certain part of their shelter, standing in a certain orientation all day, and you think, okay, maybe they are putting more weight on that left forelimb. You know, it's like building up a whole picture. So a good thing to look out for with something that they spend a lot of their time every day doing is eating and chewing. And hopefully they spend a lot of their day eating forage. That's the healthiest thing for their bodies and their brains as well. And the function of their jaw and their habitual chewing motion have a big effect on the rest of their body. So you might notice them only chewing in one direction, and that will set up a lot of restrictions and asymmetries through the rest of their body. And sometimes it will actually change the morphology of their feet as well, the way that they stand and move. So horses, really, they should use all parts of their mouth throughout the course of the day with chewing. And it's very useful for them to have lots of options of how to eat, different heights, ideally some different types of forage, but obviously there's a nutritional consideration for certain other health conditions, like if they're metabolic, for example. But what I try and do on my setup is I have a choice of different feeding heights, as many as possible that are low, so simulating grazing. And then I have some that are simulating browsing, so from a higher height. And I do use hay nets. I use the knotless hay nets generally. Hay nets partly to reduce waste and contamination of the hay, but also because they help to wear the incisor teeth. So when I do dentistry for posture and soundness, a very common thing that I see is incisors that are too long. You might notice, if you watch your horse eating, you might notice that you can really see strain in their muscles, their chewing muscles, which are on their cheeks. You might see lines when they're chewing. Yeah, you might see that they only chew in one direction. They should really change directions during chewing so that they chew evenly on both sides. And their jaw should make an elliptical motion. So there's some forwards and backwards motion. If horses only ever eat from one height, and if they might do this, if you have lots of different heights available, but they don't choose the different heights, they choose to only eat from one height, they may have a real restriction of their jaw that means that they can only eat from that height because they've got the teeth only allow the jaw to move in that direction. So because horses have got such a long dental arcade, the wear, even wear of it, requires them to have lots of variability in the way that they chew. And if they don't have that variability, then they can actually wear grooves into the teeth side to side. You sometimes see that. Or they can make hooks and ramps at the front and the bottom so that the jaw can't come forwards and backwards. You might even notice with that lots of, they might be head shy or have real neck tension, that kind of thing. But anyway, coming back to the eating part, observing them eating, you might see certain things with the movement of the jaw or a preference for a particular feeding height. They might hold their head in a particular direction all the time whilst eating. They might take a mouthful of food and then lift or lower their head to chew it. And all of that is relevant and important information that something will probably come to light when you then have a look at their teeth. And it may also be related to persistent morphologies in the feet, which sometimes you can do a lot of remedial trimming, but if it's actually coming from dental occlusion, you won't quite correct it because it's actually coming from that as opposed to the foot itself.
Yeah, we've actually had, I mean, years ago now, but we had Dr. Thomas Teske on the podcast to talk about like what you're saying, basically how the hooves might wear or how the balance might change based on their dental balance or vice versa, you know, how they're, you know, moving and how that affects how they're chewing or and then how their teeth wear and stuff like that. So that's super interesting that you've seen that same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend learning from Dr. Teske whenever you get the chance. It's really, really excellent information.
Yeah, that's great.
And then did you want to talk about also what you might notice actually about their feet?
Yeah. You know, as a hoof care provider, obviously I tend to zone in on the feet. So I was wondering if you had any, I know that you talk about reading a horse's feet. So I was wondering if you had any clues that the hooves can give us about, you know, their comfort or their movement or their overall health.
Yes. So comfort, you might notice disparities in feet, for example, feet being different in size. So often if they're offloading, if they've been chronically offloading one foot, it will tend to be a bit smaller and more upright. You might see disparities in the size and shape of the frog. If they habitually stand in a camped under posture with their hind legs, for example, you'll usually see larger frogs in hind feet that are a bit squashed flat. So if you haven't maybe noticed the posture, or if the posture is a bit subtle, you might notice that disparity between front and hind frogs, for example. You might see changes in different anatomical structures of the foot itself. So for example, if heels curl under or maybe just on one side, or you have, if you were to draw a line down the middle of the frog, you might have more foot on one side than the other. And so then all of these things, like I said earlier, they might not necessarily be this sign means this specific thing. They don't necessarily follow on in such a linear way, but they allow you, they give you a clue as to what to maybe go and check next. And I've definitely found that we need to kind of continually check between the foot and then higher up in the body. And there's this chicken and egg thing, but it helps to address both. You know, they usually, one doesn't really happen without the other. It can be hard sometimes to know which thing happened first. Sometimes it's really obvious, sometimes you never know. But it gives you clues as to, because the hoof capsule gives you a clue as to what has been happening with the loading over time. So that's more of an observation than necessarily the attuned part of the assessment. I think I was going to say about, so I said about postures, I was going to say about facial expressions. So one thing that I love to observe is blinking. And there are so many, once you start looking, there are so many different types of blinking. And different individual horses seem to have different habits around that. And it gets really fascinating, because I think that they've learnt amongst the, you know, every individual has a learning history. So in their lifetime, they have communicated in certain ways with certain horses that they've been with. And it's very sad when they actually have not had company, and they often, you can notice some changes in the way that they respond over time, because they're becoming more socialized when they then can have more interactions with other horses. Say, for example, you can have a blink, which is a bit of a concerned blink, which is like a really rapid, like a snap closed and back open of the eyelid. Or you can have this really sort of luxurious, slow closing of the eyelid and gently opening it again. And so you can start to see changes that are quite subtle in the way that they feel about things just by observing the type of blink, how many times they blink. Sometimes when they're getting concerned, they blink a bit more frequently. And then sometimes the other way around, when they're actually getting less concerned, then they blink more frequently, but it's softer. So all of these things, if you are noticing them, then you will be responding to them. And the horse definitely notices that. And then they feel a lot safer around you. And then they will often be a bit clearer about the response that they then give. With foot handling, I find that a lot of horses, they really need quite a lot more time than a lot of people expect to be able to organize their body and lift a limb. And if we just sort of yank it off the ground from them, it can feel quite unsettling. And they really have to do a lot to change their balance, especially if they're a bit uncomfortable somewhere else. And they really appreciate that if you pay attention to how much time they need to organize their body and limbs before they lift a foot for you, and also when they need their foot back. And I think the other thing that I was going to talk about in that category is breathing. So that once you kind of get your feel and your eye in for that, it's much more obvious. Horses, sometimes their breathing is not very noticeable. And actually that can be information in itself. They don't tend to have very noticeable breathing ever. You know, some horses, maybe they don't do a big snorting blowout really ever. And once that starts to happen, you know that something within their posture and their body is shifting. Some horses really hold their breath when you touch certain areas. And if you respond to that by, what I would do is just take my hand away and pause for a moment and try again. And you will go off on lots of dead ends, because there will be things that are happening in the environment or something that just happened to happen at the same time. But once you it's a really slowed down practice. You know, it's much more in depth than an examination that doesn't take into account those responses from the horse. So it does take quite a long time, and it's worth doing in multiple different sessions as well.
Yeah, and it really sounds like it's very much like almost learning their language and how they communicate their discomfort or whatever is going on.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm sure it takes so much longer than just a podcast episode to really kind of dive into all of that. But it is, I mean, that's, I really have seen a lot of what you're saying in a much lesser capacity, at least in hoof care, like what you're talking about with letting the horses kind of like organize their limbs and be able to balance and not just like yanking a foot up off the ground.
Mm.
And that's something where I have seen horses become much easier to trim or willing to stand at liberty without having a handler, just because you're willing to sort of give them the time they need to be comfortable with their trim. So that's awesome, because I've never really thought of it as, you know, an organized way, like you're saying. So that's really cool that there's actually this focus there and looking for those things and making sure that you're providing that for the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously, I know that this is going to look different in every single case and every horse is going to have a different journey through what's going on with them. But do you have kind of a specific example of a horse that you've worked on that might have a good sequence of this attuned assessment and how you worked through it with them?
Yeah, I've actually got a current rehab boarding case who was really quite concerned about foot handling when he first arrived. And a really important thing, so like you were saying, with trimming at Liberty, I actually really like to do that because then I get very true feedback about how they feel about the process. So I do all of his foot care and trimming at Liberty. I do use some food as well, just because if they wander off because actually they're a bit hungry, that's different to if they don't feel if they don't feel comfortable. But he's fully at liberty just whilst eating. And the thing that I responded to with him was enough time for him to reorganize his body to lift a limb and the orientation that he wanted to stand in. So he wanted to stand very slightly uphill. His front end's very slightly uphill to be comfortable to lift his feet. He didn't want to stand very slightly on the side of the hill, for sure, and not downhill either. So he wanted to orient himself before we started. And then honouring his need to have his foot back when he needed to have his foot back for a moment in between parts of the, whatever it was, hoof care or the trim. And then also the height. So sometimes, so he's got some things going on with his hind end, which I've been able to gradually find through this process of repeatedly exploring the range of motion and the comfort of his hind limbs, whether he needs to have his foot actually held fairly low, whether it's okay to bring it out behind further, whether it's okay to bring it forwards. And then that can lead you to checking different regions. So is this coming from his hock? Is it coming from his stifle? Does it feel like it's maybe his hip? Is it actually the other limb that he's standing on that is the part that's making this difficult? Because sometimes it's the, if you have a problem with foot handling, sometimes it's the limb that you're actually lifting, but actually sometimes it's the supporting one that's now taking more of the weight.
Right.
So through that, I've been able to, and also part of this actually has been his hoof rehab. So we've been peeling the onion. So his foot comfort has improved. And then we're able to find kind of the next layer of discomfort. And it's led to me finding some significant discomfort higher up in his lumbar region and the abdominal muscle region and his ribs. So that was a really interesting process of kind of, yeah, unraveling, peeling the onion back in layers. He was really one of those ones who was extremely anxious about almost anything that you did to begin with. So it was very difficult to differentiate a body region that was the problem. And through this process, he's felt better about just general interactions and being touched in the areas where he isn't uncomfortable. And then he's been able to show more specifically where he is uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so really this is basically almost its own way of diagnostics. And then from there, you can figure out a treatment plan that will help get them to where, you know, they're in a healthier spot.
Yeah. And really what I've been pondering recently is I think sometimes we can get a little bit stuck in, we have a lot of diagnostics nowadays that are available to us. And some of them are very, very high tech and allow you, you know, a lot of detailed views of various structures. And that's really, really useful only if you know how relevant it is to that individual case. And so we do need to be really careful when we're doing diagnostics that we do relate it back to the actual case. Because I've had a few examples of where a really thorough diagnostic process has been undertaken and the diagnosis at the end has not matched the clinical signs at all. So we need to be careful about that, because then the reason why your approach may then not be helping is because actually it wasn't quite the right thing in the first place to focus on. Because you know, you can probably find stuff on investigations, but it's what is relevant that's important.
Yeah.
And yeah, the diagnostics are definitely still important. But I think also probably sometimes when we do have access to lots of diagnostics, it's tempting to do them all or do a lot of them. And actually, we can maybe be a bit more focused if we have more focused feedback from that individual patient.
Right, exactly. And that's the hardest thing, right, is that, you know, they don't communicate with English words or, you know, in our own language. So then learning their ways of communicating is important, which sounds like basically this approach is kind of figuring out how they're letting us know what is going on with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so obviously this it's a large topic. So I would love you to share again, information if people can get in touch with you. But on kind of like a closing note, how can horse owners or other equine professionals or veterinarians start incorporating this into their work? And what benefits do you think they'll immediately see from using this?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest takeaway is if you possibly can, and I know it's often practically difficult to do with a busy schedule, but is just to take even a few more minutes of time with each patient, because that is usually at the start, rather than kind of going in really quickly to start an examination, to just take a little bit of time to notice some signs that they usually do show at the beginning, but we can sometimes blow past a bit in our efforts to, you know, we want to help and we want to find out what's going on, and then we can kind of miss those few first things. So just even just a couple of minutes can often, of just observing them, just watching what they're choosing to do, can give you a lot of information, and usually leads to more of a cooperative process as well. And then just try and notice kind of anything you can, and some of it won't be relevant, but the more your eye is drawn to things, the more you do notice. And then sometimes you think, wow, now I see this, I can't unsee it. I'd see it in so many horses. And you talked about the case with the hind feet handling. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more effective because you can usually do more, and it's safer as well when you're working.
Yeah.
To respond to their concern in this way. So yeah, taking a bit more time, I guess, is the main thing. And if people want to learn a bit more detail and how I kind of set up the situations, because the thing that I didn't talk about actually is I use food and scent kind of exploration stations in this quite a lot to see what they choose to do with their body. So I might set up different surfaces to walk over, different feeding heights, see how they're organizing their limbs and their body, how they would prefer to use their teeth and their jaw and position their limbs and things. And then you can go in and check stuff. You might think, oh, they repeatedly knock a pole with their left hind. You know, do they have reduced range of motion, or are they not feeling it? They're not aware of that limb, for example. So I run an online workshop, and there is actually one starting soon, a tuned assessment online workshop. My website is nurturingnatureequine.co.uk, and the page for the workshop is /attune. So there's 3 Zoom calls with that. There's some videos and webinars in the member area, and then there's 3 Q&A calls with that. And the first one of the one that's starting soon is on the 15th of October. I should say that right now I actually do have a rehab boarding space becoming available. I know that probably lots of people who are listening won't be anywhere near West Sussex. but I do actually have, it's quite rare to have a space becoming available. And that's because I'm a postural rehabilitation professional, I went down that route of training when I realized that my vet experience so far kind of didn't really leave me with any answers for certain cases. So the dentistry part of it was a big part, and also the hoof part of it was a big part, because it just affects their whole body, how their feet interact with the ground, and then how they chew, their chewing function. And there, it's all connected through the whole body. It's made a massive difference to what I can notice and also help with. So yeah, that's a large part of my rehab process, is chewing function and jaw alignment, and then hoof function and comfort as well.
That's awesome. And yeah, and just a quick note, I mean, we do have a lot of listeners in the UK, so maybe there will be some that are near your area. But that's so great that you're able to offer all that. And yeah, I really appreciate you being willing to discuss all of it with me.
Oh yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for being willing to come on the podcast and discuss all this with me, and, you know, kind of explore some of that way to understand our horses better. I think that's super important and hopefully really helpful for owners to start to look into.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure.
Yeah. All right. And have a great rest of your afternoon.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. Have a good rest of the day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
I always say that I'm slightly more hoof-obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too, so we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.